Hello, Barely Normal here. On today's episode, we talk with Albjorn. During our discussion, we talk about her transition journey from male to female. This is a sensitive subject for some, and this is her story and her experiences. Anyone considering transitioning and hormone replacement therapy should consult a medical professional. There are risks involved in all medical procedures, and you should know them all before starting your journey. If this subject matter makes you uncomfortable, I encourage you to listen with an open mind or just skip past that part of the interview. And now, please enjoy our podcast. This is Barely Furcasting, featuring Tabin, an Injured Nerves audio production. And now a quick apology. I was having problems with my microphone during the recording of our podcast, and so my half sounds rather tinny. I apologize, but I hope you enjoy the show anyway.
Hi. Well, hi, Tabin. How are you today?
Hi, Barely. I am just great. And how are you today?
I can't be any happier. It's a sunny day out. It's not too hot. And we're recording our podcast.
We are. This is what we're doing. I just noticed that. I'm glad you let me know.
Yes. I didn't know whether you knew we were recording a podcast or not. But here we are.
We are.
So I understand that you are working on a song.
I am. I got a request from Fuzzy Orange Foxy to write a song for all my Foxy friends. I started on it and wrote the first two verses and chorus. And so it's a work in progress, but I did that. So I hope you furs like what I've done so far.
All right. Well, let's take a listen.
I come home and my foxy is fluff, and first I have to pet before I put down my stuff. Oh, Foxy, why are you wearing that sock? And I just wanna pet fox. Oh, pup, just wanna pet fox. Some furs say you must first pet the pup, and others say you first put the mouse in a cup. But when I look at all those red fluffy locks, I just want a pet fox. Oh, pup, just want a pet. That's all I really want, to pet fox. That kitty over there is just sitting in box, so I'll just pet the fox. Oh, I'll just go and pet Fluffy Fluff. Fluffy Fluff Fox, the fluff. Fluffy Fluff.
Oh, okay, so a mouse in a cup. I have to say, I've never heard a lyric along that line before. Why would you... A mouse in a cup?
Well, because they're little things and they fit in a cup, I guess.
Awesome. That was pretty cool. So that, again, that for our listeners, that was a teaser, first two verses and the chorus. So
of course it's called I Just Want a Pet Fox.
We got some questions in our quote unquote mailbag this week.
We did.
Yeah. So one of the questions we got was they want to know the story behind the production company name. So as you know, this is an Injured Nerves production, and the company name came from many years ago. I had kids. Well, I still have kids. They are grown okay. Now. And they were into skateboarding and inline skating and doing all that radical stuff.
Radical.
Right. And they wanted to do videos and movies and things like that. So, and then of course, that was also the time when the cities were getting mad at everybody for skating on everything and in their public buildings and down their railings and on the benches and stuff.
Oh, yes.
So we would get run off by the police all the time when we were trying to video. I learned that if you had a production company, you could get permits to do stuff in places where you would get run off.
Oh.
So I started the production company, and I thought, you know, these kids are, you know, falling down and breaking their arms and their bones. And I said, they're probably injuring their nerves. I said, hey, that's a great name for a production company, Injured Nerves. And so ever since, I've had that production company, and now we're doing furry stuff. And I do some other stuff with it too. So.
And that's right. You have a YouTube channel, Injured Nerves Productions does, right?
The Injured Nerves Production Company is where the video version of the podcast is, which is just basically the podcast with our logo on it so people can listen on YouTube.
And pictures from the guests.
Oh, and pictures from the guests. Yes, if they provide them. And then somebody asked, how do you know so much about math?
Oh, me. Oh, well, I don't know if I know so much. I know some things. When you like something, when you turn out to be passionate about it, you just kind of read about it and watch the vids and stuff like that. So you just kind of, you know, eventually you just know things about it. And so that's what this pup did once. At one point, I found out that I like this math thing that it turns out to be a lot of interesting concepts. It's not just algebra. It's not just calculus. Although as interesting as that is, there's a lot of really interesting, cool things out there. And I wanted to learn more about it, like how things work and why are these things, these interesting things, what actually goes into them. So I just started reading and learning more and more, and you just learn stuff. That's how I know what I know.
Right. And you have a natural aptitude for that.
Puptitude. I have a puptitude.
You have a natural puptitude for math.
Yeah. So it also just kind of works. My brain just, my fluffy brain just kind of works that way too, apparently. So it works out well. And I continue to learn. I'm still trying to learn and read more stuff and learn more things. So it's...
That's always good.
That's, I guess, a message to all you furs. Just if you get passionate about something, you find something you like, just go for it. Just learn more about it. It's good stuff.
Wonderful. And then for both of us, somebody asked, what is your favorite video game? So I'll let you answer first if you have one. Do you have a favorite video game?
You know, that varies over time, just like with everyone, every fur and everyone. So at one point, long time ago, it was Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter Nights are very cool, very fun. These days, it's Hearthstone. I'm really bad at it. In fact, I'm wanting to do some hit Hearthstone fail vids so every fur can see how bad I am at it. But I'm wanting to get into some other things too. I'm forgetting at the moment what they are. But right now it's Hearthstone. I have coming in a Nintendo Switch, so I'm hoping to play Animal Crossing in the very near future.
Cool. So my favorite video game is Crash Bandicoot.
Crash Bandicoot? What is that?
It's like a game where the character runs and jumps and hops and does all that stuff. Okay. And it was a game way back when on the PlayStation, when PlayStation was, before they had numbers on the PlayStation, when it was just PlayStation. And so they re-released it about a year and a half ago on the newest PlayStation platform. And so I downloaded it. I play it occasionally. So that's my video game.
I might actually have to check that out because in the beginning, this pup was really into Super Mario Brothers, of course. So that kind of thing is interesting to me.
Have you started any new books? I know you finished Waterways. Did you start anything new?
I finished Waterways. I haven't started anything new. I want to. There's a few little short stories in the 10th anniversary edition of Waterways that I have. One is Follow Nick. I guess for Ask Kyle Gold, what happens to Nick, which is Cody's brother in Waterways. And so he wrote a little short story about that. And so I want to read that. And then there's another one about, well, I can't say anything because it's a slight spoiler alert, but there's another one that I'm really interested in reading too that's in that book. So I want to do that. And I have some other Kyle books out. Grookus has Kindred that's coming out soon. And I'm really excited about that. So I got a few things on the horizon.
Yeah, I'm still reading Heretic and Waterways at the same time. I have the characters separated in my brain now. I can jump from one story to the other and know what's happening in those stories. And then on television now, we started watching Doom Patrol on Disney Doom. Plus.
Oh, and how's that?
Well, it's a DC Studios comic. It's a quasi-superhero. It stars Brendan Fraser and Timothy Dalton. So if you like those characters or those actors that you want there, it's okay. It's a little formulaic, if you will, but it's still entertaining. It's like, oh, you're watching it and you're thinking, oh, this is the DC version of the X-Men.
Okay. So if you like those things, you might like that.
Yeah, pretty much. So anything new on TV for you?
Nothing new per se. I mean, I'm still looking through F is for Family. Well, the last episode, I watched this yesterday. It's so hilarious how it ends. I do want to mention that I put out a tweet to just ask Furs, what should I be watching? I got a few responses back, and so I thought I'd give a little rundown of a few of the interesting sounding furry-ish animated shows that people said. So people said BNA, Brand New Animal, which barely you had talked about in a previous podcast, and I still need to watch that. And Bluey, I think a lot of Furs know about Bluey, so I won't read about that. The things that you might not know about that sound interesting, Kippo and the Age of Wonder Beasts. And I haven't watched any of it, but let me read you about it. The series follows a girl called Kippo Oak, who is searching for her father after being forced to flee from her underground burrow and must explore the post-apocalyptic surface world ruled by mutant animals to find him. Along the way, she befriends human survivors, Wolf and Benson, and the mutant animals Dave and Mandu. So, sounds interesting. Another one suggested was Polar Bear Cafe. So far, the only summary I can find about it is Polar Bear's Cafe revolves around a Canadian white bear that quits his boring job and starts a cafeteria near a zoo. When you search for it, you find some videos about before you watch Polar Bear Cafe. So apparently, you're going to have to watch that first, which is a little ominous. There's another show suggested called Samurai Pizza Cats, which I haven't read about yet. So I'll just mention that.
Samurai Pizza
Cats. Samurai Pizza Cats. It's an anime thing, apparently. And this one sounded actually really dramatic and interesting, but it's also supposed to be a comedy furry thing. So let me read you its plot. Retsuko is a 25-year-old and single anthropomorphic red panda who works in the accounting department of a Japanese trading firm, facing constant frustration every day from pushy superiors and annoying co-workers. Retsuko lets out her emotions by going to a karaoke bar every night and singing death metal. So that's
okay.
That's fun. After 5 years of working the daily grind, Retsuko's unhappiness causes her to undergo a series of events that puts her job in jeopardy, forcing her to shift her relationships with her coworkers, and ends up changing her life in unexpected ways. She then turns to marriage as a way to get out of work, though this too brings about mixed and unexpected results.
Well, we look forward to your reviews of those shows as you watch them.
And hopefully that gave you other for some ideas of things to watch if you're looking for things to watch.
I had never heard of any of those things.
Neither have I.
And what network are they on? Did the Furs tell you that, or did they just give you shows to listen to?
They just gave me shows, but I did find out Polar Bear Cafe, watch on Crunchyroll, so I don't know what that is, but it's a thing apparently. Kippo and the Age of Wonder Beasts is on Netflix. Actually, it actually first season aired January of this year, so it's a pretty new one. Samurai Pizza Cats, actually I think it's on Crunchyroll 2 or something. And this really dramatic thing about Retsuko, which as I say is supposed to be a comedy, is that's on Netflix also, and it came out in April 2018. So it's got a few seasons, I think. Lots of info there for you first.
So today we have a very important interview with Al Bjorn.
Yes, we do.
We're going to pass over the 5-minute Furs for fun today in order to get right into that interview. So let's listen to our interview.
Let's do that. Wag, wag.
Well, joining us today is Al Bjorn. Welcome to the podcast, Al Bjorn.
Bart, thank you. Yeah, it's good to be here.
All right. Tabin has a whole bunch of questions that he likes to ask, so I'm going to turn it over to him. And Tabin, take it away.
Hi. It's so good to hear your wonderful voice and know that you are still there. And that's great to know because stuff and everything. And actually, Barely's already hit on my first question. First, let me ask, would you like to respond to some questions from this little pup right here?
I would love to. It's been entirely too long.
It's been way too long. We saw each other, what was the last time, at TFF this year, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yep. Very briefly.
But it seems like so long ago. We first met at, I think it was FC 2017. Does that sound right?
That's correct. Yeah, it was.
Was that your first FurCon? And of course, Barely was there too.
It was. So I'd actually gone to two other furry conventions in the, I think it was like 99 and again in 2003, but only for one day. So this was my first full con. It was in 2017.
Oh, cool. And then how was that for you, going to your first big, huge con?
It was actually pretty lonely because I didn't know how to con at the time. So I was making notes to go to panels, and I was standing in line and not really talking to people and not living in the moment and going with the flow, but instead trying to stick to my schedule. And so I didn't really get to meet a whole lot of people per se until I finally went downstairs at midnight and in a suit that I had made while at that convention, and I ran into a very lovely pup.
And who was that pup, Alba Yorn?
Well, I'm talking to him right now, actually.
It was wow. That's bark, bark, wag, wag, nostalgic and everything like that. Great. And so then after you met said pup, what happened to your experience in the con? Did you get a little more communicative with people, or did you feel a little bit more at ease, or how did that go for you?
That con, if I remember correctly, it was probably on Saturday evening, because like I said, I was making my suit and fixing and stuff like that. Like I barely made it to the parade by sewing the legs onto myself because I didn't have time for belt loops or anything. So
I remember that actually. Yeah.
So yeah, I made a few more connections, but it took me several more cons to get into the crew.
Yep. Yep. Sometimes it definitely, for me too, the first one was pretty much the same, I think. But yeah, it took a while. But you get into it. And I've seen you at other cons. What other cons have you gone to or do you typically go to these days?
Let's see. I've gone to, I tried for each year to go to a new convention, right? And I would ask people what convention was interesting to them, because everybody has different perceptions. And each con has such fascinatingly different experiences to be had, right? And I just find that so fascinating. So I've BLFC, first one was 2018. And that one's definitely a go-to because there's so many opportunities to interact since everyone's in one hotel. Well, everybody's coming to one hotel, right? And one central spot. And further confusion, actually. So I almost didn't keep going to further confusion because the first one was such, there's a lot of other personal stuff that was going on. And so it wasn't a good experience. And the next year, you were the highlight, to be honest. Yeah.
Glad I could help.
But yeah, the next year I decided to go again so I could rewrite that story. And it definitely was an amazing experience now that things were better. So yeah, Midwest Fur Fest last year was AnthroCon as my first con, first AnthroCon. I did the parade with a broken fan. That was an interesting experience. Let's see. Oh, up here in the Pacific Northwest, Anthro Northwest.
A&W, yeah.
A&W, yes. That one's spectacular. I really like it. It's one of the few that I contribute to as a volunteer because I want to give back into that community. Vancouver is a lot of fun. For Landia, I try to make here and there. MFF, Midwest Fur Fest, was a lot of fun if you could get a hotel closer to the action. So the last time I went was far away, and I probably won't go again unless I can get closer to the main hotel. But yeah. Oh, and this year was my very first TFF. That was the new con for this year.
Oh, this was your first TFF. No, I guess I knew that. Yeah. And then you went to Vancouver this year. So you went to the last like two cons of the year.
Yeah, it was my first back-to-back con, where 4 days at one, 3 days off, and then 4 days at the next.
Yes, that's tough. This pup knows how that is. Once or twice about three or four times I've done back-to-back cons, but one of the times I think I came home, I had 1 day at home before I had to go back out. So that's tough. So what is your fursona?
Well, again, that's an interesting question. I created my fursona back in 1995.
I'm
definitely a gray muscle. And it was for sociopolitical ramifications muck, and Tiger Den was another muck, which was an online. So MUDs and MUCs back then were kind of like, I guess, Second Life, but it was text-based only. So you could have like 50 people in a room all conversing in public and private. And yeah, so I made a snow leopard, and that's Albjorn. He's snow leopard shapeshifter. Then when I was working on a fursuit. I took like a 15, 20 year break from the fandom as I raised kids and thought I had to be responsible and all that stuff. I mean, one should be responsible, but one should also be genuine. So I set a lot of myself aside, which we'll get to. And then for making my fursuit, I didn't want to make all those rosettes from a snow leopard. So I went, I figured, well, I'm a shapeshifter. I can be an Arctic fox. And that's my main form these days is an Arctic fox.
No, that's wonderful. And I've seen the Arctic fox. No, I've not seen the Arctic fox. Yes, I have seen the Arctic fox.
Yeah, that's my suit. So
yeah, I have. Well, good for me. I remember something. That's amazing. I have a lot of fluff in this little puppy brain, you see. So now, is it true that your first Sona, that's a word barely made up, F-U-R-S-T-S-O-N-A, your first Sona wore a kilt? Is that correct?
It's not, actually. So it's the second Sona, that the Arctic fox, because at that time, I had fully embraced the concept of kilts and was wearing them 365 days a year.
Oh.
And so I incorporated that into the first suit I made, which was a three-quarter partial, but with legs instead of arms. So I'd wear a long sleeve dress shirt and I would have fuzzy legs under a kilt.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
So wait a minute. No, hang on a second, Damon. I want to jump in here for a second. So you said that you fully embraced the kilt lifestyle. You were wearing them 365 days a year. How many did you own?
Well, the first one had to be washed a lot because it's the only one I owned. Towards the end, I think I owned 8 from 4 or 5 different manufacturers. The one I settled on that's absolutely the best, in my opinion, is a company in Portland, actually. I'm up in the Seattle area, so you would think Utilikilts, but Portland's Stumptown kilts have a lot of features to them that are no nonsense. And the best feature is that they're made of a material you can take out of the dryer, wrinkle free. You can put them in the dryer and you can take them out and they're wrinkle free. So some of the canvas kilts you have to like cold press with an iron and all that stuff. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I own a Utilikilt and I also own a kilt from 511 Gear. It's a police supply house and they make tactical police.
I do kilts. Have a Tacticilt.
Yeah. And they're lightweight. They're easy to wash. They're, you know, they're not the thing that weighs 16 pounds when you wrap it around yourself. So, all right. Going back to you, Tabin. Sorry, I had to jump on the kilt thing because I'm kind of a.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say before you jumped in. I was going to say, so Barely's pretty way into kilts. And so I figured he'd have something to say. And he just did. So moving right along, let's talk about your journey. So you're on this amazing journey, have been for a while now, this transitioning journey, and you probably are still involved in it. And I think there are a lot of furs and people in the fandom and out of the fandom, but especially in the fandom that are currently either in this transitioning journey themselves. They might just be starting with it. They might still be in the struggling phase with the questioning and just figuring things out phase. You know, there's so many phases, just like everything, of course. We thought that, you know, it would be really great if you could tell us about your journey and share your wise words of wisdom with us and tell us what's going on, where you are, and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So for your listeners, I mean, it might be part of the blob of text around the podcast, but I was assigned male at birth and came to accept and understand that I was transgender. It was right around August of this year. So it's actually almost been exactly 1 year that I fully embraced and accepted that part of me. And at first, I was taking on the label of bigender, which means that I have several aspects of both. And it's a complicated story as to why I adopted that term. But it was pretty accurate at the time. And I grew more comfortable to realize that I am much, much more female in my internal identity than male. So like, I'm still classifying myself as non-binary, right? Or bigender, but it's easiest to tell people that I'm a transgender female, or honestly, I'm a gal. So yeah.
Well, that's exciting and happy anniversary. Congratulations. You've made it a year. You're sounding great. And I remember talking to you at TFF about you were, let's see, it would have been closer to the start of your, you know, starting all this back then. And I remember you were really excited about where you were at mentally and how you were progressing. Tell us a little bit about how you kind of realized all this about yourself. And what was it that helped you embrace this part of yourself and decide to make the transition that you eventually decided to make?
Yeah. So I am also Therian, which is having an identity that is that of a different species. So I'm a fox inside. And I was going to therapy to like try to figure out like how do I, because it's like a really core identity to me, like how do I comport that with living in society at large and what have you. And there were a couple key things that transpired for me to finally accept the gender that I am. And the first one, in the trans community, there's this concept of being an egg, which is somebody that is transgender, but they can't yet accept that aspect of themselves, whether it's through societal pressures or as a defense mechanism due to childhood traumas or, you know, whatever. Many people that transition later have suppressed this part of themselves, and they'll fantasize about being a different gender, but they don't have anyone to really talk to realize that that's not a standard cisgendered desire, right? And so like, I've heard stories of women saying, oh man, you know, I wish I was a guy, because then they wouldn't have to deal with glass ceilings and misogyny and all this other stuff. And a trans man who was assigned female at birth that's listening to those conversations will not know the degree to which the person is saying anecdotally they wish they were a guy versus inside they're feeling like, wow, it would be amazing if I could be a guy, even if it was for a day. So there's a document that I can send you that was a huge eye-opener called The Gender Variant Phenomena. And it was a research article published in 2003. And he goes into people that are late transitioning and the common themes in their past. And that was a huge eye-opener, but I've gone slightly out of order. So as an egg, one is not yet aware of their gender discrepancy, and they may experience life somewhat monotonously because they don't have access to a core part of themselves because they've locked that away. And so like, I didn't really care for photos of me. Like people would occasionally send me one, but I hide behind my camera. And so I was always the one taking other people's pictures. And someone would send me a picture and I'd be like, oh yeah, thanks, I guess. I mean, I would be courteous, but like it didn't really make me happy to see it. I didn't care what my clothing style was until I came across kilts. Surprise. Deep inside, it was like, hey, I can wear a skirt. But I also wasn't thinking in terms of that. I just knew I felt better when wearing a kilt. So in the trans community, something will happen that causes you to start questioning and realizing the assumptions that you've had about your identity. And when that happens, it's called cracking the shell of the egg. The egg cracks. And then after a while, the person hatches and starts on their journey. So for me, it was a subreddit called egg_IRL.
Oh, cool.
Which is full of memes that, you know, say some kind of joke, but that's totally cis, I'm sure, right? You know, as if that's what all men or all women behave rather than transgender men or women. So it was a meme, and I went to go bookmark that meme, and the browser said, you've already bookmarked this. Do you want to replace it? And I was like, oh, what? I tend to remember all my bookmarks. So it must have been a long time ago, right? And it was like 3 weeks ago. And I was like, oh no, I've probably suppressed the memory of the meme. Let me go to the subreddit to see what the other memes are. And oh no, these are all like describing me. So that was kind of what kicked off the exploration. And then I found some journals, you know, research papers and stuff that seemed to describe me to a T. As part of the Therian and the counseling for that, I have been working on living authentic in the moment and accepting myself for what I am and finding ways to be genuine in my approach to life. And it finally came to me that the fox that I am was most definitely female. And I'm at the time was male. So then, and that's why the bi-gender label fit for me until I could explore it more and realize the fox was trying to tell me something about me. So, yeah.
So that's really cool. Kind of jumping ahead to what I was going to say later, but you just kind of hit on it. My question was going to be, how has your fursona changed you and or helped you through the process? And I think you just kind of answered that. So your fursona really helped you realize, this is who I really am. This is what I really need to be doing. This is starting me on my journey.
Well, to be clear, this is a common perception. The Therian, where one identifies as like a species, whether it's a mythological or one that we've observed here on this planet, that is technically different than the fursona. Some people combine the two. For me, they are very different.
Okay.
And so the fursona helped me. And the thing I love about this fandom is that fursonas, like, they're all original characters. They're all OCs. And everyone is expected to craft and put thought into a representation of themselves. And it can be an amplified version of themselves or something they aspire to. But everybody's investing in that effort. And it provides such an amazingly supportive environment for people like me to explore and try on different representations. And so the fursonas really help in that. And it also is kind of funny that it's not exactly rare that those that adopt a fursona that can transform, a shapeshifter, if you will, end up discovering that they have a non-standard identity of some sort.
That actually makes sense, definitely. Well, that's really exciting. So you had the, you know, the whole psychological aspect of the change, and that was a struggle, but you've come through it. You're better for it. You're flourishing. And of course, there's the medical aspect of it.
Yeah.
And so how has that change been going? What's that process like?
Yeah. So historically, if one had a gender dysphoria, one would need to go to therapy and need to live their life 24/7 as the gender that they perceive themselves to be before qualifying for hormone replacement therapy.
Oh, okay.
And so that was historically. So that the gender dysphoria was a diagnosis that had to happen first. And what they're discovering is there's a not insignificant portion of the transgender community that experiences as their clue gender euphoria when they can see themselves as the gender that their brains interpret themselves to be, right? So like being able to use a face swap app, right? Or whatever that like shows you an alternate gender or something. And that spark of like, oh, wow, that's really neat. Like that is becoming an acceptable component for diagnosis as well. So that's the first part. And that's more along the lines of what I couldn't see my dysphoria through the clouded perceptions that I have, because I had just learned to cope with the constant disconnect, right? And I figured that's what everybody had to live through. So suck it up and just keep going. And it wasn't until I saw the euphoria that I realized life could be different and pursued actually fairly rapidly changes to bring me in that direction. And the other thing, in several countries and regions within those countries, and the Washington state is one of them, they have adopted the concept of informed consent, which means that for places like Planned Parenthood, we no longer have to have that diagnosis or jump through the hoops. Doctors are now permitted, and they feel that it's ethical to respect a patient that has gone through the effort of determining they need hormone replacement therapy and provide it. So I couldn't keep going without taking steps to transition in the November-December timeframe last year, as I shifted out of the bi-gender label and started realizing just how much I was a woman. And so I scheduled an appointment for Friday the 13th December to transform for real, and went to Planned Parenthood and walked out with a script. Not always is it that fast. Sometimes you have to wait for test results, but I happened to walk out with a script and filled it that day.
Wow. Okay. And here you are. So this whole transition process, how long has it taken? And that's really a hard question, I realize, because depends on what, where did you start? Well, are you talking about starting with a struggle? Or are you talking about starting with the walking into the doctor? Are you talking about walking into what? So in your estimation, then from your perspective, how long do you perceive this process to have been for you? And where are you in the process?
Yeah. So, and I meant to clarify at the beginning that this is an interview with me about my story and journey, and everyone's journey is different. So by no means is my experience meant to be prescriptive as to what other people's journey is. So, and the community by a large part is very accepting of where people say they are and just accepting that because, you know, nobody can dictate where someone's internal mind is landing at any given time. So,
and it means different things to every person, what it means to be at this point. Even if they use the same words, it's going to mean different things for everyone. So that makes total sense.
Yeah. So for me, the first inklings actually go back to grade school. So the fascinating thing about when one transitions is that a lot of their life is suddenly recontextualized because you're looking at it for the first time through clear lenses. And you realize that, like, oh, that comment that somebody told me in school, right, that really hurt. Now I finally understand, like, why I reacted that way. So recontextualizing my life, I see clues that were scattered all throughout. I had started exploring my gender representation in the muds and mucks and then got married and had to be the sole breadwinner and thought I had to live the life that society expected of me. And so I kind of put all of that aside and locked it away. And then the egg cracking was in March of last year. And then by August, I had to accept, right? So I hatched essentially, had to accept. And I did a lot of research. There's a website called Pocket Genders that has like 60 different labels that have been crafted. And a lot of them are not widely accepted, like that they're kind of like niche labels, but yeah, they're super descriptive. And so it can be really helpful to just, I spent a whole day just reading through every single page on the wiki to try to figure out which ones felt right. And then lots of processing. There was a lot of life changes. I would say the hardest, there's a lot of resiliency that one has to learn in order to work through this process of change, because you are rewriting so much of what you thought you knew. And you are losing connections that you thought would be there forever, right? So like I've after 24 years, we're going through a divorce. And so I would say that, and the level of uncertainty as to the course one is taking, because you have to focus on the journey and you really don't know what the destination will look like. So those are the hardest things that I've approached. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think with everyone's journey, whatever it may be, there's going to be hard things, but you know, it's the struggles that make us better, you know, so that's great. And you are so much better.
Yeah. And I do want to clarify that, like, my spouse did support the transition, but the aspects of growth that one experiences really does change a person and can create challenges, right, in compatibility. So life is change, right? And in order to live and pursue life to its fullest, you are growing. And so, yeah.
Where are you now in the process? How far do you think you are into your journey?
HRT takes years and years to finish molding the body, but you do see significant results in the first year. And so I'm 3 days away from 8 months anniversary on HRT. And so for male to female, the vocal tracts don't change, but other physical attributes like fat is new fat that you take on is placed in areas that would be female appropriate. And you have to work off the male fat essentially because the body burns that first or something. I don't know. So that shift happens. There's another 3 or 4 years for the chest to finish reaching its final size, for example, and for like the cheeks to like plump out a little bit. But I'm probably 4 months away from the biggest set of changes to be completing. Oh, and males, there's not a lot that's like permanent from hormone replacement therapy. Like, I mean, there are medical procedures to put things back but for the hormone changes. With the exception of a female to male hormone replacement, the vocal cords do change, and that's not medically reversible. So
interesting. Medical is crazy. Just in general, I've always thought medical things are just crazy anyway. So I don't understand any of how that works, of course, but the miracle of us in this modern day. So you talked about some of the hardest parts of the transition, but what about the easiest parts of the transition?
Well, it's really hard to say that there's anything easy about coming to terms with core aspects of one's identity. But I would say finding joy in being oneself, right? The euphoria that occasionally shows up, and the comfort in knowing that for the first time in my life, I am able to live more genuinely and more compassionately. That has, it's definitely made things possible to go through all of the other struggle.
Cool. Yeah. No, that's wonderful. So, I mean, imagine the answer is yes, in that what kind of support groups or something similar are there for this process? Like if there's people starting to go through this or in the midst of it or wherever they are in their journey, what kind of resources and supports are there out there?
Yeah, so there's lots of, I strongly recommend talking to a therapist to help work through the complicated emotions that are coming up and tease apart kind of the sources of reactions that one might have. So seeking professional advice, I'm a huge proponent of that because that's their job, is to help people through these kinds of situations. That does cost money here in the States. And so sometimes you can find free or community resources. There's also like local groups, LGBTQ plus societies that can provide support. Here in Seattle, there's one that they would have an annual spring clothes swap because the ones, you know, both genders are transitioning. And so they're both getting rid of the clothes and other people need them, right?
So,
yeah. So, you know, there's community resources like that. And then I have found some support on certain Reddits, subreddits that are focused on being supportive, right? And they're moderated because there is also aspects of online interactions that are less than pleasant. So
what?
Yeah, can you believe that? Let's see. And then some of those will end up having links to Discords where, again, they're gated, right? Because they see your post history and stuff on Reddit. And then they're moderated as well to make sure people aren't being bad actors. And that can be a safe and comforting place to meet others of your kind, whether it's any of those letters in the LGBTQ plus range.
Yeah, great. And because you mentioned therapists, of course, I think that what you say, Sam, makes a great point that I think it's good to point out that like people hear the word therapy and, you know, there's kind of a negative connotation to that. But I like what you're saying in that there's people out there to help you just understand what you're feeling and going through. And they're not going to be able to tell you what it is, of course, because you're you, but they can really help you sort that out for yourselves. Are there particular like types of therapists you recommend, or do therapists just generally can do this type of thing well for people?
So the thing that I would recommend is to do your research, because each therapist will include in their bio aspects of themselves that can lead to a greater connection and an easier interaction for potential clientele. So like each therapist is different. And if you do get one and you're not hitting it off and you feel like they're not a good fit, then definitely feel free to shop around, right? And see if you can to try to get another one. The idea is to have someone that acts in the role of a mentor that can ask you questions that you might not think of asking yourself, that can lead you down the path of self-discovery. Like a good therapist is there to walk with you and to ask those insightful questions and then go, huh, that's interesting.
Never thought about it like that, but okay, there it is. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to help us understand a particular person's first journey a little bit more. I think that will be very useful and insightful for other furs and people out there that are looking for help, because it's not, you know, you use the word niche, it is still a niche thing. And, you know, I think there's lots of people that would like that help and support and know there's these kinds of people helping them through it. And that's great. So thank you so much.
Of course.
Changing to another part of you, and you've mentioned this a little bit, but you have done photography for a while. Are you still doing photography?
So it's a little bit harder during COVID. So I've actually debated, I've been really getting into virtual communities and VR chat. And so I have debated setting up a photo studio in VR chat and potentially having commissions for people's avatars with like proper depth of field and lighting setups and stuff like that. So that's something that I want to explore. Let's see. I really miss conventions because, well, I am also a physically affectionate individual. And so I really miss that, getting hugs, right? And getting to meet so many people. So VR has kind of helped me with that. But I still have around 30,000 photos from last year to finish processing, because I would take photos at conventions, and I take a lot of photos, and I would go to a lot of things. And because of the journey, I had to put a lot of that on pause, the processing and editing of the photos on pause. So I'm working through that backlog where I have space as part of my COVID isolation. Man, just before COVID took off, I actually set up a photo studio, and I had two people come by pre-COVID because I was going to get into doing like non-con, non-convention photo shoots in this regional area that I find myself in. So I do plan to get back into that, like at parks and what have you, now that some of the restrictions are relaxing. So we'll see.
Okay, cool. Yes. So pre-COVID, what type of photography were you mainly in? It sounds like you did most of it at conventions.
Yeah. So I did most of my photography at conventions. And it's kind of my artistic outlet. And so I use a combination of strobe lights, otherwise called flashes, that I had been exploring different ways to modify the light from those flashes. So I had different kinds of light boxes that could either focus or disperse the light, and colored gels that I was starting to really get into exploring for artistic and aesthetic purposes. So yeah, and it's a digital camera that I use, and I was starting to give talks about photography. I think I gave talks at three conventions last year on my process or tips and tricks for using relatively cheap hardware and creating good results. And most of it was at conventions. I had a few commissions where it would be a photo shoot for an hour or two in a specific location. And yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I remember A&W last year. You were busy. You were running around. I think that was probably one where you ran one of the panels.
Yeah, I gave three talks at that one. But yeah.
Three. Wow. Yeah, I know. Well, barely knows that just what I do, just doing the. Yeah, that's insane. When you said 30,000 photos, I don't know if you saw, but barely just went. I could tell you was like thinking that's insane.
Yes, that's a lot of photos to edit.
I mean, you know, it's a few thousand per convention. And then at Penny Arcade Expo, I also do photogrammetry. And so you need like 500 photos of a space. I would find the most interesting booths, and I would do 500 photos plus some video, and then recreate that 3D into a model to preserve that experience. And so I need to get back to those. Yeah.
So you're doing a lot of things, branching out photography and everything. Even during COVID, you're having ideas and the VR thing, and that's really cool and exciting. So you're getting more into commissioning, it sounds like. Do you charge for these, or how does that go?
Yeah, so I'm charging a relatively competitive rate, but it is a bit higher than other people charge, but I think my results are worth it. So I would offer at a convention, and the pricing is designed so that when I am in your presence, you have purchased my time, and I am not thinking whatsoever about parts of the con I might be missing. So I work within people's schedule, and I'll be missing stuff, but that's perfectly fine because you're my customer and I'm focused on you. And I would also provide one or two photos edited during the con so you could use them for social purposes before the convention's over. Cool. So yeah, it was a pretty good package deal. And I would usually get one or two people that would take me up on it. And that would be enough to cover the room or meals or something. Like, it wouldn't cover the whole thing. It was run at a loss, but yeah.
But you had a good time doing it and helping other furs out and everything like that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair now, it's really not run at a loss.
Yeah.
You're having a great time.
No, to be super fair, it's probably half to a quarter of what I should be charging if I were using actual photographer community rates. So I feel kind of bad because one shouldn't be undercutting professionals. And so I priced mine at slightly higher than prosumer. So like a very cheap professional, but I am not entry-level professional quality. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's a fine line.
But I can attest to you do great work. So any of our listeners, five, or maybe we have six listeners now that are out there, she does do great work. And yeah, no, I've had the pleasure of being one of her photographer-ies several times. So that's great. How can FURS get more information about your photography services? And as you say, you're branching out into trying to think more about the VR stuff and more outside of con stuff. So how can FURS get more information about you and getting a hold of you and taking advantage of your services?
Yeah, I'm Albjorn on almost every social media platform, just to preserve and reserve those names.
Sorry, how do you spell that?
Oh, yes. Albjorn. And Twitter is my most prolific account. For a while I was doing, I kicked off the hashtag Fursuit Every Day. And for the first half of last year, I was posting a fursuit picture that I had taken every day. And I have plenty to go for years. But I had to set that aside while I worked through life changes. Yeah. So I plan on getting back into that. And I also have albjorn.com, which I plan on dusting off and potentially having a blog there to track the journey that I'm on.
Cool. That's exciting. Cool.
I was just going to say that's really cool. And say, are there any other final thoughts that you'd like to impart to our listeners? Anything that that really strikes home with you that you really want to get out to our?
We have 10. We'll go with 10.
I think we have 10. I'm going to say 10 now. So we got 10 listeners that are waiting on everything that you have.
Wow.
Pressure. 10 furs are listening to you.
I don't know how you pull this off, Taven. Let's see. I would say the biggest thing that has helped me is to understand that in nature, life is change and growth. Like, there's not a single plant that is static. Like, there's always something going on, even in winter. And embracing the journey of growth and understanding that if you're aiming for a destination and then thinking that you're going to just stay there and stagnate at that destination, that is the opposite of growth in life. And so we have to embrace the journey itself and acknowledge that it won't always look like we thought it would. But as long as we can keep steering in the direction we'd like to go, it will remain a net positive and we will grow and our lives will move in the direction, even if we take detours. So, yeah.
I think that's great. I think one of the key phrases there I really like to take away is embracing the journey of growth. And then the exciting thing about that to note is we don't always know where that journey is going to take us. We think we do, but maybe not. But embrace every detour and every change. As long as you're growing, it's very much worth growing. And of course, that's why we've got the Verdi community around us to help us through all that. So yes, I love that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And embracing the moment as well, right? So like, don't be so focused on don't focus on destination, right? Focus on the journey, which means being present and mindful and experiencing life that's here now. Yep. And course correcting and trying to aim in a path of growth. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So what's interesting is when I reached out to you to ask you to be on our podcast, you're like, oh, I'm nobody important. Who wants to listen to me? I mean, you were like, oh, why would I want to do that? But you have given us so much to think about. It's incredible. I'm so glad that you agreed to be on, because I know you stepped out of your comfort zone to do this a lot. And so once again, you have grown and you have moved on your journey.
By being on our podcast.
You've grown.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, it's making me tear up a little bit just saying how proud I am of you. To be on our
show. Like I'm a big advocate of mentorship and doing what I can to leverage the resiliency that I found in myself to be an advocate. And so I'm very much happy to be here with you guys.
Thank you.
Well, we thank you for joining us. We're going to wrap this up and move along. So thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure. Tabin, any last words for Albjorn?
Just can't wait to hug you again and bark, bark.
Feelings mutual.
Yeah. Okay. Right. See you later. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Wow, that was very interesting. That's a long journey that she's been on, and it's been it's very fascinating. She gave us a lot of good information. She was texting me even as we were talking about the stuff. She was texting me the links, so we'll put that in the body of the text for the podcast in the description, and then of course in the comments for the YouTube, so people can get those links.
But yes, that was there was a lot of things there. I think this was very useful that she just told us about her journey. And of course, I want to remind every fur's journey is going to be different, of course. But that there's a lot of commonalities between what she said and what other furs might have or will experience. So that's really great. Yeah, that was really great. I'm glad we had her on. It's great.
I'm glad we had her. I'm glad she overcame her initial... like I said at the end, she was very reticent to come on. She's like, oh, I don't speak well. I don't talk well. I get tongue tied. And I was like, no, you need to tell your story. This is important. So I'm so glad she.
Not many opportunities for that. So that's great.
Especially in this COVID world right now.
Right. Especially, right.
You got to find your voice. Well, Tabin, what do you say we move on to our next segment?
Well, I will say let's move on to our next segment. That's what I say about that.
Okay, so I guess it's time for Furries in the News.
Furries in the News.
So I actually did find some furry news today.
Oh, you did?
Yes, from our good friend Patch O'Fur at Dog Patch Press, who will be coming up on a future episode of our podcast. Apparently, there is a gentleman in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who is writing a book about subcultures and social movements under the Trump years. And he's interested in the furry fandom.
Oh.
And so he's going to have a section in his new book about the furries. He has a survey for furries to take to answer questions for him. You can go to Dog Patch Press, and there's a link there for the survey. I'll put a link in our description for our podcast. And so you can read more about that at Dog Patch Press, and you can go to the link there and link onto it, or take our link and go from there. But it takes 5 minutes to fill out. It's not very hard to fill out at all.
It's a fur friendly thing. He's wanting to actually know. He's curious. He wants to know things.
And then for you music fans out there, there's a new Horizons Anthology Volume 2. So if you have listened to Volume 1, you know that everybody's been waiting for Volume 2, and it's out now.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, the furry music anthology called New Horizons, it featured the original one featured 13 musical furry artists and their release. And it's free for anybody to listen to on bandcamp.com. And you can go there and search for Furry Music Anthology and New Horizons, and you will find Volume 1 and Volume 2. This one has 15 new artists, and it ranges from smooth rock to strange industry-type stuff. I listened to some of the tracks today.
I'm going to have to listen to all of that and find out.
Regale us with the tales of math.
Okay, so I'd like to talk a little bit about this thing called the Brouwer fixed point theorem. It sounds like a purely math thing, but it actually has some nice applications or fun applications. So what's a fixed point? Well, a fixed point is you start somewhere and you start doing something. And when you start, you know, you have a bunch of points. And so you have a point, you have this location, and you do something. And at the end of doing this thing, it's possible that location, by the end, it's still in the same location. So that point might have moved throughout what you're doing, but at the end, it's possible that that point is still at the same location. And that's called a fixed point. It's fixed. It hasn't moved through everything you've done. So for example, you have a coffee cup and you put cream in it and you stir the cream, right? Well, when you do that, you get a little whirlpool. You get that little point in the center that doesn't move anywhere, right? That's a fixed point. Okay, great. The Brouwer fixed point theorem says that under certain kind of relatively nice conditions, these conditions are like all mathematical and closed subspaces and stuff. Don't worry about that. The point is there exist conditions under which you have a fixed point. So for example, in the real world, if you take a map of the city in which you live, so remember those things, barely maps, like paper things you fold up and everything?
I think I've seen one of those in a museum, yes.
Yeah. So they had these things, these paper things you would fold out and look at like where you are and all that stuff.
Yes.
So if you took one of those, a map of the city you live in, lay the map down on the floor. And so the floor, you know, has a whole bunch of points underneath it and everything. If you locations, when I think, say location, points, just think locations. If you put that map down on the floor by this Brouwer fixed point theorem thing, there exists at least one point on the map which tells the location of the corresponding point below it on the floor. So you take that map, you put it down on the floor, and like there's a point on the floor there that corresponds to a point on that map.
So if you stuck a pin in it, it would stick to the floor and that would be the fixed point.
And that would be the point, the corresponding points, the fixed point.
Okay, exactly. Gotcha.
So that's pretty cool and interesting application. You can take two identical sheets of paper, crumple one of them up and put it on top of the other, the uncrumpled sheet. Then by the fixed point theorem, there exists at least one point on the top sheet, the crumpled sheet, that is directly above the corresponding point on the bottom sheet, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense. Okay.
And that's really interesting. There's at least one. There could be more, but at least one. So you could crumple this up any way you want and put it anywhere on the sheet of paper. There is at least one point for which this is true. Another interesting example. In the morning, you see a circular puddle of water covered with oil.
Okay.
A gentle breeze blows all day, shifting the oil about the puddle's surface. Just like that breeze. But not breaking the oil film. So it's a gentle breeze. When you return to the, there it is again. When you return to the puddle in the evening by the fixed point theorem, there exists at least one molecule of oil which lies exactly where you saw it in the morning.
Okay.
It might have moved around throughout the day, but in the evening, it has come back exactly to where it started from, which is very counterintuitive if you think about it. But this is true, and it's all based on this purely topological sounding math theorem. And that's really cool, I think. So I hope you first enjoyed that.
So what practical application would you use fixed point in other than sticking your map to the floor?
Other than sticking your map to the floor. Or looking at oil.
Or looking at oil being blown by a breeze. That would be a great name for a repair shop. Fixed point.
There you go. See?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, I've learned one more thing about math that I didn't know.
One more.
I know that they use fixed point theory in a lot of sci-fi time travel stuff.
Okay.
You know, they say, you know, that's a fixed point in time. It can't be changed.
Okay.
So it's, I don't know if that has whether basis in math or whether it was just some sci-fi writer made this thing up.
Yeah, so that was that's a very interesting thing, I think. And I think next time I'll talk about the ham sandwich and or the hairy ball theorems. And so we'll just see how that goes. But they're very interesting and very useful theorems, as you might imagine.
So you know what that takes us to, right?
What does that take us to, Barely?
That takes us to this or that.
This or
so we're going to jump right in. Rain or snow?
The snow is really cold, but you can make like snow pups in the snow. And I like that. But the rain can be really nice, all pitter pat pup when you're inside looking out and looking at the green. I don't know what I'm talking.
So if you're looking inside, you're out in the rain, clearly.
So you're out in the rain and you're wondering, why is it wet when I'm looking inside and it's not wet in there.
It's dry and warm in there.
Why am I wet? There is a lack of logic in that sentence. So I do like the greenery and stuff when it's all pittery pat and it sounds good and stuff. So I'm going to go with rain.
So going to, I guess, movies, prefer comedy or horror?
Oh, comedy. This pup gets scared so easy, Fluff. Oh, my pup. So definitely comedy.
Definitely comedy. Okay. So a car or a motorcycle?
Motorcycles look and sound scary. And I know barely you ride one. So
yes.
I'll leave that to you and your butchness. So I'll go with car. And also I can hang my little puppy head out the window and have the breezy in my facey.
So our last one, chocolate or vanilla?
Well, I hear that chocolate is bad for this pup because I'm a pup and I do like some chocolate, but I try and cut down because I hear it can kill me. And that's not good. So, and I do like to put coffee in my puppy dish and put sugar and vanilla flavoring in it and lap it up. So I think both those reasons say I go with vanilla.
Well, that brings us to the end of our podcast. We need to thank all of our listeners for listening.
Like at least 10, I think.
I think we have at least 10, yeah. Remember, if you'd like to ask us a question or leave us a comment, you can do so at barelyfurcasting@gmail.com. You can help support the podcast through Ko-Fi or buy me a coffee, either one of those. I want to let everybody know that our podcast team and family is growing.
We have a team now.
We have a team. It's great. So we have two new associate editors, Rain Raccoon and Canes.
Associate editors. That's crazy.
Associate editors, right? So they're going to be mostly helping with editing the guest interviews for the podcast. Additionally, we have a new music associate.
You do.
His name is Regde. He's from England. And he's working on our original music for our podcast. So that should be fun to hear what he turns up for us. I'm very excited. So we have a family and a crew.
And he doesn't just turn up for it. He also radishes for it.
He does, yes.
You heard it here from this pup.
Okay. Well, and be sure to join us next week. Our guest will be furry journalist Patch O'Fur from Dog Patch Press. So with that, Taben, you have a super week. We'll listen to everybody and they'll listen to us in a week.
Okay. We can't wait. See you next time, Barely. Wag, wag.
Barely Furcasting is an Injured Nerves studio production and is found on all major podcast platforms or can be heard directly at barelyfurcasting.com. All opinions expressed here are those of Taben and Barely, and neither received any commercial compensation for their opinions. The Furcast is produced, recorded, and directed by me, Barely Normal, a.k.a. Mike Began, and is edited by myself and our associate editors, Rain Raccoon and Canes. This week's interview was edited by Rain Raccoon. Opening, interstitial, and closing music by Shane Ivers through SilvermanSound.com. If you would like to send us a message, you can do so via email at barelyfurcasting@gmail.com or on our Telegram chat at BFFTChat. Additionally, Taben can be reached on social media at TabenPup on YouTube and Twitter. Thanks for listening. We hope to see you back here next week.